Hello and welcome to yet another episode of CTO Talks. My name is Dmitry Stepanov and I am a co-founder and CTO of Glorium Technologies, an international technical company, and that hosting tonight's event. This is a video podcast for technical leaders. And for those who want to become them someday, we have guests who possess extensive experience in the area of technology. And tonight's guest is Rosalind Radcliffe. But before we start our discussion, consider please subscribing to our channel. We have lots of great content coming soon, including future installment of CTO Talks. Now, let's talk about our guest, Rosalind Radcliffe, IBM Fellow, 35 years. Well, 35 years is a lot of working for the same company. I think it means that you're doing something right, that's for sure. And actually, before we continue, I mean, the main topic of our today conversation will be around this book, Enterprise Bug Busting. Even so it says bug busting, I think we're not going to talk a lot about bugs today. We actually will twist our conversation in slightly different direction, and you will understand why we're not emphasizing on bugs. Because, Rosalind, we're going to talk today about what? About quality, right?
Excellent. Absolutely. All about quality. And I'm very happy to be here today with you.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you very much for this great opportunity to talk about your book and about your experience. And about your knowledge and skills and everything else. Well, I guess one of the main, in introduction, in one of the first chapters, you are saying, it's most people do understand, but by some reason not using it in practice, that testing is not quality, right? Testing is just a measurement of how quality was done. And that's actually probably majority of the discussion we're going to have today. But before we go there, in your experience, how many people do you think acted just like testing is a quality, approximately, out of curiosity?
I mean, if you look at the industry, I think most people think testing equals quality. If I have good testing, then I have good quality, even if it isn't necessarily the right answer, but that is a very prominent thought process, mm-hmm. Unfortunately. So
it wasn't just my kind of gut feelings. It's actually what you see as well in the industry, mm-hmm. Okay? Well, what is quality? Can you give us your understanding, your interpretation of the quality?
Quality is delivering capability to end users that provides the function they expect, they need, or they want, depending on the definition. And it is secure and it's reliable and it provides the capabilities when they need it. So it's all about the function, the capability, and the security and reliability for them to be able to do what they want to do. Good quality probably also includes good user interface or good access, easy to use within mm-hmm. reason. And some things are not easy to do, so maybe they're not as easy to use. But it's that focus on the actual capability that is delivered to the end user. And testing helps you verify that, but you have to start with quality and design quality in from the beginning.
Okay. That's actually, I think, what people are confused about. So they're confused about, I guess, quality assurance process and validation and verification process is all mixed up. Everything is the same. It's just synonyms, no difference, no borders. And that's all confusion is coming. So can I say that in your view, quality is meeting business expectation, in short words?
It has absolutely to do with meeting business expectation while mm-hmm. also meeting security, risk profile, all of those things that some people might not list as business requirements, but the non-functionals that are required as well.
Non-functional, yeah, but they're still business requirements, right? I mean, if you have, I don't know, financial business, you have specific requirements to security. If it's some, I don't know, well, I mean, I don't want to negate social networking or something like this. They do need to follow some security, but definitely different from financial industry. Actually, good question, who is working better from the security standpoint? I would actually question, at least from my experience, what I saw and what I witnessed. Anyway, that's actually, I was slightly confused when I was reading your book. In the metrics, basically in your book, you're stating that metrics are important. And the metrics are important not just because you properly measure something, but you, I guess, send proper message to the team, to the business, to the stakeholders, because some metrics might be wrong, some metrics might be good, some metrics actually can motivate you to do some bad stuff, right? So it really depends. And you have like you systemized metrics in the following structure: availability metrics, business value, customer satisfaction, development, learning, happiness, operational metric, quality, security, value, delivery, speed, offering. So you actually put metrics for quality as a separate metric. I thought that business value, I don't know, availability metrics, development, operation metrics, security, they're all quality. So why did you put it as a separate metric here in this case?
They absolutely are part of quality. Part of the problem is the industry uses the word quality metrics for a set of things. So when we measure things like number of defects, when we measure things like code coverage, we call those quality metrics, but everything is actually quality. And that's the same problem with quality assurance teams. We're using a term for a testing team, usually, that isn't the one responsible. Well, they're partially responsible for quality. They're part of the solution. But we can't totally remove ourselves from the fact the industry uses some terms. Quality assurance teams exist. Things called quality metrics exist. But we need to look at the bigger picture. And that's part of the point of the book, to say, let's look bigger. Let's look at quality first, just like we should look at security first. It's everybody's job.
Yeah, that's actually, so the question is, you said that quality assurance team is partially responsible for the quality, but who is responsible for the quality in this case?
Everyone, the business person who's providing the input in the first place to make sure that they're specifying it correctly, the developers writing code, the architects who are designing it, the operations that are running it, and maybe we can actually have a product team so everybody's together and they're not separate silos, but everybody's not there.
So if business person is coming and saying, you're not doing your work properly, well, it means that you're not doing it either, right? Something is wrong in between. Since we did touch business aspect of the quality, well, usually there is a separation between business domain, I guess, and development domain. And by development domain, I mean everybody, developers, quality assurance department, I don't know, DevOps, designers, everything else. So it's like we driving business and we are developing. And by some reason, there is a huge Chinese wall between these two domains. So what can you say about this Chinese wall? How does it affect quality? How should we, break this wall, and what should we do about this?
Those brick walls, when we think about DevOps, we talked about breaking down the brick wall between developer and operations, but really, it really should be biz, dev, sec, inf, QA, ops, and I'm missing somebody in there. The point is, break down all the silos. And that's why I like product teams. I really like the idea that everyone works together to deliver the capabilities, and business has to be part of it. We have to have that partnership with business. Otherwise, we end up throwing things over the wall. And in any place where you throw things over the wall, you give it to a different team, you have an opportunity to get it wrong. You have an opportunity for confusion. You don't get that fast feedback. If you really have a product team, if you really have a group of people working together, then everybody understands. The other problem with that brick wall with business is business doesn't understand what it takes to do the work. So right. Unrealistic requirements come out, and we all have lived with a few of those. So if you're really working together, then you really understand what it takes to deliver the value. And so you can focus on what's the highest business need. What do I really want first? What do I want that's maybe I don't have to have it first? Or maybe it's really actually not important once I see how this process works. What is the way to drive that value? What's the best experience for my end users, for the capabilities that I'm doing?
But I mean, it's a two-way highway, right? I mean, it's between developers and business. I mean, developers also should understand business needs and try to propose solution, not just like, well, we have best practices, therefore we're going to do it like this. Well, yes, you have best practices, but we need this, even with a low quality, even partially working, but we need it next week. And we have a need in this. And that's actually a big obstacle. As you said, throwing over the wall, it's both sides sometimes happens.
Well, and that's why the partnership is the only way to solve that problem. If business and IT are literally working together, then they can understand that better. They can collaborate better. And they mm-hmm. don't have that misunderstanding. I mean, there are times you end up with, I have to have this. Well, right. Why do you have to have that? And a lot of times that requirement comes through as I have to have it. And they're leaving out the part that, oh, the legislation just changed and the laws just made it, so I must do X. Well, that's a really important thing. I have to do it by that date. That wasn't a made up business date. That was legal regulation. So we want to do it before the regulation comes in because we don't want to miss that date. Those kinds of things.
But at the same time, if your team cannot deliver it, I mean, from the business standpoint, you must handle it from the business standpoint. Yes, you will be late, a regulation. Yes, you will be in violation with some compliance. And then you need to do something from the business standpoint, not just stand and demand. I just need it because law required this. That's unreasonable. I guess reasonable expectation and reasonable communication between both parties provides you good solutions. Okay, good. Pam. I asked this question already. Continuous, you actually dedicated a lot in your book, Space for Continuous Integration and Continuous Deployment. Well, I mean, we probably will not discuss it, but how you describe it. I mean, everybody can read about this in your book. And actually, I guess I should emphasize, majority of the book is focused for the mainframes, not to the desktop or maybe not to regular cloud computer. Even so, it can be used universally in many aspects. Probably 90% of the book is pretty much universal knowledge, but about 10% is very focused on the mainframe. So value of continuous integration and continuous deployment from your standpoint, why do we need it? I mean, why is it so important?
Wait, if we don't continuously validate, if we don't understand quickly what's going wrong, we spend way too much time doing the wrong thing or not sure. By doing continuous integration, continuous delivery, we have to do continuous test. We have to do continuous validation. We have to partner better with the business to be delivering that frequently. So it helps push this change in culture, this change of I'm going to build something small, I'm going to deliver it, I'm going to see value, and I'm going to get that feedback. And that change in mentality, I've always said you can do Scrum Fall, you can do lots of things, but if you push to having to deliver on a frequent basis, and you pick a week, actually, even at a week, and I know that's not really continuous delivery, but even at a week's delivery, you can't fake it. You have to automate things. You can't get enough manual time in that process. And so if you're pushing the process to you have to automate, we remove all those manual errors. We remove all of those, users in the system making changes that I have to then go deal with later. We remove all those problems from the system. And by getting continuous delivery, I can really test quickly. I can really understand. I can do experiments. I can understand if this way of doing something, the users like it or not. And I can pull it back quickly by delivering an old version if I need to. I've got lots of flexibility if I really have a continuous delivery option. And if I don't, then a lot of people are probably spending a lot of manual time doing a lot of things, and nobody enjoys manual repetitive tasks. If we have a pipeline and the automation, then people can focus on the things that excite them and that deliver business value.
Let me try to summarize, and you tell me if I'm wrong, and actually I will sprinkle some of my ideas here. So CI/CD process, it's not just a process to have or to do something, as you say, like a small delivery process and everything else. It's actually a process that enforces you to do specific steps, and actually it makes you to make specific steps that improves quality. It improves quality through decomposition of the task to the small one, so you would understand actually, and you deliver those small tasks instead of huge one that you have no idea how it's working as too small details. It's improving quality through, as you said, making sure that you didn't break any previous, I don't know, automation tests or anything like this, and it actually verifies you on the fly. But as the same way as many other processes, I don't know, risk management, control management, many other frameworks like this, just improve the quality. It's not because I want it, it's not because I like it, because I do it. I mean, and, it's just quality, right? That's correct summary.
Yeah, it absolutely helps you change the way of working, change the way of thinking. And when we think about risk, and we think about separation of duties, we think about all sorts of things that are regulations and or best practices and or lots of things throughout the years. By doing things with automation, we remove the errors that are happening in the system because someone's doing it manually. And that is a quality improvement in of itself, removing those repetitive manual tasks. And realistically, I haven't seen this statistic recently, but at one point in time, it was somewhere near 56% of the errors in production were caused by manual configuration errors, not by problems.
Because we didn't test quality of the deployment process using our testers, right?
Well, we didn't deploy it automatically. We deployed it manually. And so a user made a mistake, which happens. If you do something manually, you're opening yourself to mistakes. And if you get rid of all the manual part, assuming you've tested your automated deployment, yes, then you don't have those problems, at least.
Yeah, but it's like, it's actually very interesting. So failures of the manual deployment is a manifestation of missed piece that controls quality of your product in general. But by some reason, those manifestations, they've been ignored, and they think, well, next time do it better. I mean, well, if mistake was done, it will be done again. Maybe not next time, but every 10th time, every 100th time, it doesn't really matter, but it will happen, right? I mean, that's famous not if, but when. That's actually, let's talk about how industry evolved over the time. I mean, and I will remind you, 35 years experience in IBM. This is just, it's amazing. So, and you saw a lot of innovations, you saw a lot of changes, you saw probably a lot of mind shifts in your experience in those 35 years. I mean, I can mention a lot of different technologies, framework approaches, but let's just go to the old-fashioned waterfall and Scrum. And you actually, while you were going to talk about this, you mentioned Scrumfall. So if you could tell us what Scrumfall means and why you actually emphasized in your book, it would be great.
Yeah, so waterfall came about, and I guess when I started in development. We didn't do actual waterfall. We actually did much closer to what we talk about today. We had teams who built function, who delivered the function, who ran the function. And then problems occurred or security happened or take your choice or applications got bigger. And we developed waterfall. And over the years, regulations, challenges, errors, built up this process of waterfall to make sure there were all the quality gates, make sure there were separation of duties, make sure there were all those requirements. And so we handed our work over. Never was that a good idea, but it was a way to solve particular problems. When Agile came out, everybody got wonderful. This is wonderful. I'm going to get rid of all that process, except most companies who were large and who were doing waterfall had all these teams. And so they converted to Scrumfall, as I put it, because the development team would become Agile and they would have their sprints. And then they'd hand it over to the quality assurance team who would do their 2 months of manual testing anyway. So it was still Scrumfall. I mean, it was Scrum followed by Waterfall. And so Scrumfall is something I see all over the industry. And it really is not a good idea. It's probably the worst of all choices in many ways, because I'm backing up all this function from development and not having it tested. And so you really, when we go to Agile, when we go to modern development practices, we have to get that whole life cycle and bring it together. And we have to think again about why we did. So for those of us who've been around long enough and can remember the old days of doing things, automated testing, some of the other things that we used to do that were honestly easier to do because we had one big centralized system. We didn't, when I started, we had mainframes doing computing. And then we had this PC invention, and then we did distributed computing. And we've done, and all of these things made it more complex and made it harder because out of all these piece parts, as we move in and people are using cloud, it's simpler in one way because you don't have to deal with the infrastructure, but it's harder in another way because I've got to deal with all of these services. So we have to deal with this change. The ability to deliver quick is great, but if I don't have the right automated testing, if I don't focus on quality from the beginning, if I don't have the right architectural design in the beginning, I'll end up with just as big a mess in the end. So this change has to remove the bad parts of waterfall and the over the wall throwing, but we still have to focus on design. We still have to understand the business requirements so that what we deliver quickly is actually of value, is manageable, and is monitorable so that I can make sure I don't have a problem and I can provide the availability that my application requires, because not all applications have to be available all of the time. I mean, credit card processing does, but there are plenty of things that don't have to be available all the time. So you've got to provide the availability required for the thing you're delivering.
Okay. So how do you fight? I mean, especially in the enterprise environment, it's very hard, right? I mean, a lot of established practices, a lot of managers who knows how to do it properly, and you just, who are you to teach me how to do it properly? So what do you do?
Not invented here and or I've always done it this way. I've always done it this way. Why do I need to change? It works. Actually, I've always done it this way and it works is the biggest problem. Because it really doesn't work. It has worked, but we've been working slower than the business needs. We Right. need to be able to move faster. And so, yeah, it used to work-ish, but it can't work today if I have to be able to make changes every day. If I have to deliver every day, I can't have a manual testing cycle. If I have to change frequently, that's one reminder of why they need to change. Another reminder they need to change is the discussion that's come out from the auditors about the fact that pipelines actually are better for automation, for auditors and for separation of duties, because actually that means humans aren't doing the deployment. This can make things better. And so getting out of this, the auditors say I have to do it is the other thing in large enterprises that you have to get over. And because the auditors, and there's been more information out from auditors about this being a good thing to do, that's also helped with this push to say, no, we can move faster with quality because we're going to focus on quality from the very beginning. And the pipeline is going to help ensure our separation of duties and our tracking and our process controls in a way that's much better and easier than all of the old steps that we used to have. We just need to remember to change the process documentation too. If you change the way you work, you have to change the process documentation. Otherwise, you will actually fail your audit because you didn't follow your process.
Right. Well, sometimes people are using compliance to get excuse. Well, compliance make me do waterfall actually. But well, from my experience, actually, it was a very funny story. Development team was discussing about moving to 10 years ago, most moving to agile. And it was half and half. The first half saying, no, we can't do it. It's a medical device. It's a gated system. It's gate 1 to 8. It's only waterfall. We cannot do this. It's only waterfall. That's it. And compliance person approached us and she was listening to say, I mean, guys, I am a compliance officer. Nowhere in my instruction says that you cannot do agile, just nowhere. So I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why you're referring me or my department. I'm not putting any restriction on you. Do whatever you want. Yes, you will have gate system, but even within this gate system, you still can run agile. Nothing prevents you doing this. So happens, right?
It really is, who can I blame to allow me to not have to change? Because change is hard. And that is that. I mean, that's why I wrote the book. That's why a lot of books come out about this change process, because change is hard for people. And we all, the reason I've been in IBM 35 years is I like change. I get to do lots of different things. The more we as technologists focus on change is good, let's do things better, let's continuously improve, let's continuously learn, we'll all be better off and do better for society even.
Yep, that's true. That's true. Now my favorite topic, uncertainty. I love this topic and we'll try to discuss it in terms of the quality. So uncertainty and quality. How do you think they are connected? How do you think there's conflict to each other? Because, well, quality assumes expected behavior, expected results, what business needs, and so on, so on. But uncertainty on another side says, well, guys, life is uncertain, business is uncertain, it's your problem. So I don't care, right?
Wait. There is no perfect world and there's never any perfect code. So we right. really have to do, we have to balance our focus on quality with the risk acceptance mm-hmm. and with an understanding. I mean, one of the reasons I like chaos engineering sort of is the idea that in uncertainty is always true. You have to pay attention to the fact that something's going to fail in the system. And so you have to design for that fact. You have to plan for that fact. And again, this leads to doing design correctly in the first place, but making sure you understand when something fails, what's going to happen to the rest of the system. And you have to plan from that from the beginning, which is why if you start with a quality focus, think about what my requirements are. Do I have to be available all the time? What are my considerations? And what are all the piece parts of my solution? If I'm running my own hardware, okay, I've got hardware. I can understand my own hardware. If I'm running in the cloud, I've got to understand I'm still running on hardware. It's just not mine. Somebody else is running the hardware. I've got networks. What's the network consideration? So you have to consider all those pieces and assume something's going to go wrong. If you don't, it will.
So what you're saying, uncertainty doesn't conflict with the quality. Actually, harnessing and handling uncertainty is a part of the quality. Huh? Wow, I like it myself. Okay. What was your biggest pain, I guess, that made you write this book? So what's it? This is it. I'm writing this book. It's just itching too much.
There were a couple of reasons. One is there's at least one picture of a book behind me. I've written books before, but they actually didn't have my name on them. They said author IBM, because in the old world, author IBM was the choice. So one part of me said I wanted to publish a book with my own name on it, part of the reason. The second reason is I was spending a lot of time on the road talking to a lot of clients and working with a lot of people. And it's hard to tell the stories and get the information out to everybody traveling around the world. And then COVID hit. And so I was sitting at home. I didn't have to be on planes all the time. I wasn't traveling all over the world, and I still needed to get the message out. So if I publish a book, more people can read it, more people can see it, more people can consume it. And I'm sitting at home. So while I was sitting at home working on things, I wrote the book, and I like telling stories. And telling stories, explaining what's happened in the years that I've worked, why we got to where we got to, why we need to change, and why we need to focus on quality. It was something fun to do. So I worked on it and got the book out during COVID, which is the least fun time to put a book out. You don't get to do book signings and all those other fun things, but I can share the information and I can get people to get it.
Well, I mean, that was, as I said, I think it's a great book. You did a good job. Okay, but what would be your, well, I mean, it's not favorite chapter, but I guess the favorite idea, favorite message you have in the book?
The reason I wrote it was to talk about the fact that quality is not quality assurance. It is not a quality assurance team. So the value, the concept, the fundamental principle is that quality is everyone's role. And that even in large enterprises that have been around for 110 years or so, whatever, you can change. You can do this. You can adopt. I put parts of some of the mainframe stories in particular for large organizations who didn't understand how they'd gotten to where they were. Because if you're new to technology, or if you've never been in a large company, how on earth is it possible they'd be doing it that way? Well, you know, right. If you've done things, if you've been in the industry and certain errors have happened, that's how we got to where we were. It wasn't because people were not trying to do the right thing. They were. We just got to this point and we needed to do a reset. We need to change the way we work and change that culture to be this continuous improvement, continuous learning, continuous testing, continuous everything culture.
Right. Actually, kind of the thought came to my mind when, as you were talking this last sentences, we said, well, testing is not quality assurance, but we definitely is not sending a message. Well, I'm not sending, and I'm sure Resilient is not sending this message during this conversation, that testing is something that is irrelevant. It must be done. It must be done in the adequate value, in the proper, whatever budget is allowed, with the proper types, automation, manual, I don't know, whatever testing needs to be done. Because again, even so, as we said, it's just a measurement of the quality. Without this measurement, you cannot improve quality at the beginning, and you cannot actually say, is it successful or not as application. So it is essential part, the same as essential as a business analysis is, I don't know, UX as a development or any other step in the life cycle of the product, right? So
absolutely. Testing is absolutely critical. It just needs to be earlier. We need to not wait to test. We need to do unit testing. We need to do automated testing. Testers are there from the very beginning. Write your test first and then go from there. All sorts of ways to just shift it all the way left so I get fast feedback. Testing is there for fast feedback. And then there's actually some testing, like performance testing, scalability testing, that are really key skills. So when we say quality assurance doesn't give us quality, there's some skills that are really important that are usually grouped in that quality assurance that are critical in today's world to make sure I am doing that kind of scalability testing, that kind of performance testing, to really understand how the system is going to perform under load, so that you're sure you're ready to go to production, or you're sure you're ready to go to as much of production as you're going to go to, because you might roll out function to a subset of people. Can it handle the subset? Those kinds of things. It's still important to test. It's just, don't wait. Test at the beginning. Test from the beginning.
True. And another, well, I guess it's a question. So let's say we have a project running with a okay quality, and the managers comes to the team and saying, hey guys, we're not doing a great job, we must improve quality, so everybody starting tomorrow is working on their best what they can do, improving quality, making sure that you're not creating bugs and everything else. Yes, that's it, we just improved our quality. So you're already laughing.
Okay, no, we have not improved our quality. We have to focus from the beginning, look at the application, understand the design. If we want to improve quality, we need to understand what we have. And then we need to focus on what are the areas that are causing us trouble? What are the areas that are causing the most problem? What is it? User experience? Is it performance? Is it actual code quality? Because there are all sorts of different things that can cause a bad experience. You could have, you know, the best code, but the experience is lousy. And so, okay, it's perceived as bad quality. And all of those things can lead to that. So if we want to focus on quality, if somebody says time to focus on quality, I'm like, okay, hold on a minute. What do you really mean? But I do want to take the other twist. Sometimes the quality, and it happens in life cycles. You start something new, and usually you cut too many corners in the beginning, and you got to get it out. And so there are times when you say, wait, I do need to focus on quality, but it's not from the standpoint of everybody go does what.
Yes.
So you come back and fix the technical debt. You come back and add those automated tests that you didn't do because you were trying to get out really quick. It's that kind of thing. Okay, I have a sprint that says I got to get something out because there's some really big business requirement, and I circumvent some things I shouldn't have, but we do that. Everybody does. Everybody you come does. Back and fix that then. So you don't, so that doesn't keep making it worse and worse. You gotta come back and fix that, especially when you put out early MVPs and you didn't do all the things you should have done in the MVP. Making sure you go back and fix that technical debt as quickly as possible so that you can now manage that application going forward is really important.
Well, there is a danger business becomes spoiled, that development team can deliver it tomorrow, any feature we ask. Well, technical debt, who needs those technical debt? It will be next year, right? And then it's actually very, very dangerous cycle you can get into, and then it's going to be very difficult actually to exit this cycle. So don't play with this too much, and know what you're playing with, at least this animal. It's a very dangerous animal. Rosalind, do you want to add something else about your book, or about, I don't know, message you want to send to the audience, or something you want to say additionally on top of what we just discussed?
I think the key point is quality. We all are responsible for quality, and we need to think about it from the very beginning. And if we, it's like security first, quality first. Let's make sure we focus on that quality in the beginning. And part of that, part of the transition to Agile, we had a lot of people saying Agile means no more design. And I think we also need to recognize that that probably isn't the right answer. We need to start with design. And I'm not saying spend 3 months doing a, you know, detailed architectural, but you need to design. You need to understand what you're building. You need to understand the aspects and all the non-functional requirements that this function is going to have to satisfy. With that, you've got a much better chance of building something of value. And so we always need to take the time to actually understand those aspects, understand the criteria, and make sure we really understand what the true non-functionals are, because that's where we end up usually with quality problems. Right. You plan to do something and it's only going to be for a few users, but then it's for thousands. You can't do that. Really understand what's the scope, what's the use cases to make sure that what you're building has a chance to provide the quality in the first place. And so I think that's important. And I think it's more important than it's ever been, because we cannot, and I made the point in the book, we can't get around technology now. When I started in the industry, I could go a whole day, if I didn't go to work, without touching a computer. We cannot do that today. The computers are in every single device in our house, in our cars, everywhere. Technology and software is now everywhere. It determines people's lives in some cases. And so we have to pay attention to software quality. It's going to matter. And maybe you don't think what you're building matters to someone's life, and that's possible. But there are things that you don't know that may actually affect someone's life, so, or livelihood. So it's really important that we all focus on quality and really understand what we're delivering, because it matters, and it matters a lot.
Well, thank you very much, Rosalind. Again, great thank you. And again, thank you for the book, because that's actually, this book helped me to formalize those ideas, messages I constantly spreading around myself, maybe not always as clear as I would do it now after reading your book and after talking to you. So again, it was great pleasure talking to you, and I hope we'll see you sometimes face to face and we will discuss it any further. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.